on day five of Fringe on Fringe Radio on Beagle. It is a pretty lovely day in Whangarei, and I'm joined in the studio first thing this morning by Matt DeBoer. That's how I pronounce your name?
Perfect.
Matt DeBoer. So Matt is a local artist, musician, and also has quite an extraordinary day job. I've just been sitting in the studio chatting to him, which we'll talk more about. So Matt is going to be at Wham, now it's this...
Next Thursday.
Thursday next week. And they, as in Kim, his creative partner, will be doing a show called The Imaginaries.
Climate Imaginaries.
It's a 1.5 hour piece, and it's a one-off. And first up, it's a Koha entry.
Yeah, it's free. But you know, if you want to
support struggling local artists, then bring a gold coin. So Matt, welcome to Beagle. Dive in. Tell me a bit about what you guys are doing.
Thanks, Matt. It's great to be here. So it's a new collaboration. Kim and I have never worked together before. So Kim is a local creative technologist, visual projection artist, and I'm I'm a scientist by my day job and a musician from a long time ago, and we're trying to bring something together that is a live performance that creates a space to reflect on the climate crisis.
I love the way you described it when we were talking off here. You talked about it almost like a guided meditation, it sounded like, where you're putting these, these responses that you guys have to the climate crisis, and so Kim's predominantly video, and you are sound, and you're asking people to reflect on, what the climate crisis means to them, and you described it more as a hopeful process, and you know, we get so much bad news at the moment, you know, every time I'm a bit of a doom scroller, and you're reading the latest terrifying projection for the climate and where we're going, and it seems so important to me that we retain hope in that process, because if we lose hope, we stop seeing the potential for where we can go with this.
Yeah, that's right, Matt, and I think you've nailed it there. So you know, my day job, I'm an analyst for the Climate Change Commission, and I deal with a lot of risk information. So you know, climate impact. What's it going to do to our water, our hydrological cycles, extreme weather, looking at all this stuff, and it's heavy duty gear.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of that in the media as well. You don't have to be a scientist to realize that things are changing. Things like Pakistan floods or heat waves through Europe. And those things are weigh heavily on a lot of people. At the same time, we know that there's stuff we have to do to get out of this, and it's not just preparing for those extreme events, it's also completely transforming our society. And in total, if you look at that, it can feel completely overwhelming, and there is a strong current of in two directions. It seems there's climate denialism and obfuscation trying to block action that tends to happen, maintaining the status quo. And that's not helpful, because it's holding us back and preventing us to seeing the sort of pathways through. But on the other hand, there's this whole climate doomism a reality that's out there, especially for a lot of young people, where it feels like we're inheriting a doomed earth, a ruined earth, and there's not really much we can do about it.
Mm.
And that is the feeling that I wanted to unpick a little bit in this, and to provide a space where we can actually start seeing a way forward through these transformations that we can see happening, both through the, impacts on the climate, but also how our society is going to change. Start seeing a positive but really brutally honest way that actually we can make it through this. It's going to require some hard work, it's going to be some mahi, there's going to be complete transformations needed, but actually we need to start thinking about how we're going to get through it, so that we can get to the other side, and so that it inspires us to act.
Yep. I think that's the Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, really, is it? Is how do you turn that into something positive? And you know, like we're saying off here too, that I've got four daughters, and that's the thing that wakes me up at 4 a.m. is, what am I leaving? You know, this beautiful woman, and I know it's something. You know, I've got one of them who's 16, and it is something that she is actively concerned about. Is, you know, what does it look like in 10 years? You know, what does this world look like for me? And you know, I've got no answers, but the hardest thing to do is to try and keep it in some way positive and to say, you know, obviously things are going to change, and quite dramatically, and it seems to be accelerating. But what can we do on a, you know, on a small individual level that contributes in a meaningful way? And you know, we could, if we could afford them, we could all go out and buy electric cars. But you know, those things that we know that we can change, and we're a veggie household, and that was actually driven by my 16-year-old, who at the time was 8, saying, you know, this is what we should be doing. You know, we've studied this at school. We should be stopping eating meat because that's going to make the biggest contribution to the climate in a positive way. And so that's, you know, that's a pretty amazing process. But yeah, it's that constant struggle to keep it positive when we're fed a diet of doom.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's the personal. I think where it gets tricky is that, you know, we can do personal actions, but it's only as a collective that we can get through. And there's real need for, you know, whole systems change. You know, we know that. We know we have to completely rejig the way we use energy, where we get our energy from. You know, that's a pretty major one for us globally. But, you know, as an individual, it could be hard to see how, you know, the actions you take, how they make a difference in the whole.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to do with the show is to, you know, guide us through a process where we undertake a kind of acceptance that things are happening. Yep. You know, like, let's not mince our words. There are serious things happening. And like I said, you know, we need to do the serious mahi to get through. So part of that, it's a bit like, you know, the grief process or something like that, that we need to, you know, the first thing you need to do is accept that something's going on. And, you know, my work, I study systems theory, and there's this idea of an adaptive cycle where, you know, an ecosystem, for example, might go through 4 different phases. You know, it characterizes 4 phases of, you know, you go through build-up, you go through overshoot, where the resources are over-extracted or overused, and then you go through a collapse phase where things change, you know, where the current system no longer works and it transforms to something else. And you go through a reorganization phase where you go back to that dynamic equilibrium at the start. And my, you know, my insight for the show was that actually that's really similar to what people go through, you know, psychologically. And I wondered, you know, I reflected on this thing that, well, maybe we can go through that process, you know, I could go through that process psychologically through a creative process and sort of reflect on those cycles. And I guess that's what we're doing in the show, is reflecting on those cycles, and encouraging, you know, by doing this creative reflection, creating a space where other people can reflect on those as well. And that's where you mentioned this sort of guided meditation kind of thing. Well, it's not really a meditation in that we're encouraging the audience to think a certain way or anything. It's actually just providing a space to come and reflect on the sounds and the visuals, and be in this ambient environment where you can have the opportunity to think about these positive pathways through those climate transformations.
Right, that sounds beautiful. Look, you've bought your you've got some amazing piece of kit there. I can't remember what do you call those?
It's a loop station.
A loop station, righto.
Yeah, it's a Boss RC505 Mark II.
if you're looking to get one, so basically, your instrument of choice is the clarinet.
Yeah, my major is kind of a, like, wind instruments, so clarinet. Yep. I play a Turkish G clarinet, and I've got alto sax and a couple of flutes, a kaval from Bulgaria and a ney from Turkey.
Yep. So your process is that you will play those instruments live, and you'll capture them on your loop station, and then you essentially fiddle with those each of those samples and make extraordinary ambient music.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So it's everything is analog. So I don't use any synthesizers or digital inputs, but there's processing in the machine. So basically, the machine has got five different stereo tracks. You put in the instruments into the back of it, and you can record them, you know, track by track. So you can layer up, yeah. And as you record a loop, you can layer over that loop. So basically, the process is you start off with one instrument, build it up over time, and you might record another instrument. And then there's different effects. There's, you know, delay and reverb and filtering and that kind of thing that happens as well. But that's the process, is that, you know, start with a live sound and a microphone pickup, and then, you know, you're layering up these sounds you know, they're short pieces. There's nine scenes. I call them scenes. You know, they're essentially musical pieces, sections that Kim works with the projections as well. And they're all about sort of, you know, 5 to 10 minutes each. And then they're interspersed by found sounds and recordings of natural environment sounds.
Beautiful. And you will be doing... kind of mixing this live. I don't know if mixing is the right term, but this is happening live at the event. So you've got your sounds in the magic machine, and then you're making different things happen. So you'd never, for example, see exactly the same show 2 days in a row.
No, that's right. Well, what we're going to hear today is the loop station has the ability to record the sounds, obviously, because you're creating the loops and you're recording the loops. So that's what we're going to... I don't have any instruments in the studio today, but what we've got this machine that's a recording of one of my rehearsals at home. But in the show, there is nothing pre-recorded, apart from I've got some, you know, ocean sounds and rain sounds like that. That's pretty, but you won't hear much of that today. So everything is built up live from scratch. So yeah, you're right. It's a fully live show, but there is some structure around it.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Well, look, can we crack into a little sample of what you're going to be doing?
Yeah. Well, let's look. I won't do all nine shows. or pieces. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But I'll just do a selection of them. We'll see how they go. And
so I'm just going to bump in here because I'm looking at this extraordinary book that you've got with these amazing. That's a piece of art. It's like these amazing diagrams, which is the structure for you for the show, I guess.
Yeah, it's like the set list in a pictorial form. You can't see it, but there's a sort of a infinity loop, and that goes through those four cycles I just talked about before: the build up, overshoot, collapse, reorganization, and then the nine scenes, which are the pieces, fit along that journey. You know, they go from it starts off stillness, equilibrium. And you'll notice the names of these pieces are both the psychological and the ecological names of the stages. So, and then yearning, expansion, immersion, intense growth, and then into overshoot, which is unease and the tipping points approaching, hesitation and systems overshoot, and then we get into the collapse of disorientation, then into a awakening to a new reality and transformation, seeing clearly an alternative stable state, and then back to homecoming and the dynamic equilibrium at the start. So it's sort of like it's a homecoming kind of cycle.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, all right. So I'm going to bring you up here. I don't think we've got any other letters there yet.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that was the first piece, which is, you know, the intro to the whole show. And, you know, it's about the breathing, the breath, the stillness. You know, there's life. You know, the night sounds of the animals. The flute is that's a Turkish ney, and you know the kind of cultural mythology around the ney is that it's made from just a single piece of bamboo or reed, and that it sort of symbolizes the spirit, you know, so that's the idea, that sort of this stillness, that things are in equilibrium, that it's, you know, you know, the calm before the storm, maybe.
Yeah. So, as an audience member, am I? What do I know coming in? Are you guys going to talk a little bit for them about the process or about what happens, or you just kind of you know that you're coming in to see this amazing kind of sound and visual experience, and it's your process. It's quite individual.
Yeah, I mean, I think. There'll be I'll have a bit of an explanation beforehand. There'll be some notes available, and obviously I'll make available this sort of the set and what the names of the pieces are. But I don't want to guide it too strongly.
Yeah.
It's, you know, in that sense, it's not really a guided meditation. It's more of a reflective space.
Yeah.
So, but I, you know, I think the purpose of the piece is to encourage. This active listening, right? So where an imagination, so, you know, take it where you will, but the idea is that you know, we find positive visions or pathways of transformation through the crisis. So, you know, like to try and listen to the sounds and reflect internally about, you know, whatever that means for you.
I can imagine it's something that you know, at the end of this you're going to have people milling around and wanting to talk about their experience and wanting to discuss it. I mean, I'm kind of imagining how I'm going to respond to it. And, you know, it's almost like you want to debrief, which I would imagine is a really healthy thing.
That's true. I hadn't thought about it. Maybe I should bring tea and coffee. Yeah, biscuits.
So have you got another?
Yeah, sure.
So what's this one going to,
this,
going to be?
I'm going to go... I'm going to jump into the hesitation systems overshoot one, which is it's a bit different. Thank you.
Well, that's beautiful. Also quite unsettling. This you get that feeling that something's coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of at the... That comes in kind of the middle of the cycle where my reflection on that is the, you know, systems are starting to... We're breaching some of those thresholds. We talk about, tipping points. You probably hear that in the media. You know, those things are starting to be breached. And, I mean, I think in some cases that's sort of where we're at now, right? And it's why... It's meant to reflect that kind of that tension.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really quite stunning. Okay, so these guys, Kim and Matt, will be at Wham next Thursday. Not this Thursday. That's Thursday the 13th of October. A late start, 8:30.
It's got to be dark.
Of course. Yeah. For the projections. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's not a black box down there, is it?
So, no. Yeah. And so Wham is Whangarei Art Museum down at the Town Basin.
Yep.
Yeah.
It actually amazes me the number of people who don't know where that is. So, yeah, if you know the Town Basin and you'll know the Huntavasa or the big kids' playground, then the Whangarei Art Museum is where the buses park outside. So if you've been on a bus or picked people up from the bus, you know where to go to Wham. And so we're in the front door and then presumably you'll be guided to...
To the right of the foyer there.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yep. And how many... Because that's a reasonably small space.
Yeah, I have no idea how many people are going to come.
How many people can come?
I reckon, that's a good question. Yeah, we can get 50 in there,
okay,
I think.
Okay, all right,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. And so it's not a ticketed event. You come along and...
Look, I'd encourage people to, come along for the whole thing if they can.
Yeah.
We'll start shortly after 8:30, but... If you have the time, come and hang out in the space, it's a bit over an hour, so relax, bring a cushion if you want, bring a blanket, and settle in. And like I said before, it's sort of an ambient soundscape that is there to be experienced. So it's like while we are performing live, everything is constructed live. Both Kim's visuals are all constructed live. He does live image capture and processing, and like I said before, the show, the music is all created live by looping, but it's not really a performance in the traditional kind of sense.
Yeah,
I'm not expecting applause after each number.
Yeah.
So feel free to come down, relax in the space. If you can't come for the whole time, just drop in.
Nice. Okay, well, it's going to be stunning and quite profound. So really looking forward to that one. So just again, that is next Thursday, 13th of October, 8:30 PM at the Whangarei Art Museum, Climate Imaginaries, and I will read you the quick blurb. An experimental improvised sound and visual projection performance exploring themes around the climate crisis, future transitions and transformations. And I think the abiding thing that I'm taking away is there is hope.
There's hope, yeah. Yeah, and we all need to be involved.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Okay, great. Thanks, Matt. Thank you very much for coming in, and thanks for your time, and we'll take you back to the playlist.
Thanks. What's happening?
Night clubbing, we're a nice machine. We see people. Something to see. We're night clubbing, bright white clubbing. Oh, isn't it wild? Night clubbing, we're walking through town. Night clubbing, we walk like a ghost. We learn dances, brand new dances, like the nuclear.
On the ocean, ripple to the shore.
To Beagle Radio. Matt, you're listening to Fringe Radio, and I'm joined by a crew from Northern Youth Theatre, Frankie, Rose and Ella. Hi. And in the background, who was just telling them not to swear on the radio, is Hayley Douglas, the marvellous Company of Giants alumni and local genius. So you guys are here because we're going to have a quick kōrero about The Happy Prince.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And you guys are all appearing in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that is going to be on or starting next Wednesday, the 12th of October. Two shows that day, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. And then the following day, Thursday, 13th of October, busy day Thursday already, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Both at the Octagon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So the Octagon is a lovely little intimate venue. You guys, it's quite a big piece, eh? Is it?
Well, yeah. It's like 45 minutes long, 45, roughly.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the number of performers. And is it? Yeah. Have you done a run at the Octagon yet?
Not at the Octagon.
Okay.
I don't think we
have
don't
seen
really
the
get one.
No,
yeah.
We don't get one, yeah.
Yeah, we don't get a run.
No, okay,
but
no time for that.
We have done, like, season one.
Yeah,
which
you did here. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. A little bit bigger than you.
Tiny little bigger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's, like, a lot of characters in there.
Yeah.
Three of us.
So it's going to be very intimate and possibly sweaty.
Yeah.
So talk to me a bit about Happy Prince.
I'm not the Happy Prince expert. Okay, The Happy Prince is originally written by Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
And then we've basically taken that story and turned it into a show.
Devised a new show.
So both the our story has changed a little bit from the original, but we tried to link some parts together and use some of the same lines and things like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you know The Happy Prince, you will know this,
yeah.
this story.
And there's some different Oscar Wilde play references in it too,
The Selfish Giant.
Right. Okay.
Reference.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And tell me about the devising process. I mean, you guys that's kind of the NYT co-pupper. I mean, that's you devise theatre, which is why it's such an extraordinary company. And you're all experienced in that process. You've done it plenty of times.
Yeah. Yep.
And so how was it with this one? I know you've got a framework of a story with The Happy Prince, but
it was
So we spent, like, most of term two devising it, and we didn't actually have a complete play until, like, the
couple
day
of days.
Before.
Yeah, a couple of days
this
before.
This sounds so much like Company
before.
Of Giants, which is kind of hairy, isn't it? I mean, it's a nervous energy that drives you on.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though, and, I mean, we did a lot of fun things, and there was a lot that we did, and we were like, wow, that's really cool, but then we didn't end up including
it.
And then there's some stuff that we added in, like, last minute.
And I suppose, too, as kind of each season evolves, it's different from the last one in some ways. You know, it's never never a static piece.
No, it's definitely
evolved.
The first season we didn't have a script. Most of it was improv, kind of, like, we had the specific points and lines that we were meant to be saying along those lines, but it was mostly just like
changed every night.
Roughly, it was just quite rough. Mm. But now we've got an actual script. We've written the script, and because we're at the Octagon, it's obviously a lot smaller, so we've changed our set quite a bit. Yeah, so there's a few things like that.
Yeah,
we only have the stage dimensions to work with. So
right,
yeah.
So you guys, you're running that down at your new space in Hihiawa.
Marked it off with masking tape.
And don't go outside the lines.
I
feel like, even though Hayley said she doesn't want to talk, so Hayley, your role in this, are you the director of this one?
I'm potentially kind of the director. I'm more that I'm producing it as MIT.
Right.
Where we're producing it. Georgia May, who directed the first one, is definitely credited as the director because these guys did create it with Georgia.
Yep.
I guess we're just doing a little bit of fine-tuning at this point. Yep. So I would not say I'm a director, but definitely kind of doing some little smoothing out of some bits.
And because it's you, there are going to be extraordinary costumes.
Yes.
They already are.
First season, the costumes are very cool.
They're beautiful. You're a genius. Stop it. So have the costumes changed at all, or that's same?
No, not really, no.
Yep.
Yeah, no, the costumes haven't changed because they're already,
perfect.
Yeah, they're perfect already. A charmer, you're a pro.
Yeah. And so, they also, the costumes need to be very easy to get in and out of, so most of them are just, one piece that we can put in, take on and off to change between characters.
Yep.
Yeah, we have the basic costume, which is just cardboard colours, I guess, to match with the set.
Very neutral beige colours.
Yeah, then we just have the cloak or crown or something just to...
Yeah, I think the Happy Prince is probably the most complicated costume because it's got the cloak and then the big, it's like a head about this high.
Okay.
Well, quite high above your head. And
it's when you're walking around for a day.
And Frankie had the honour of wearing it all day throughout some promotion and the parade that was on yesterday. Yeah. Not yesterday.
The Hearty Mahatis.
The Hearty Mahatis, right. Yeah.
Yep, nice. Yeah. That was a shame about the weather, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So is it... You guys don't always remount productions, eh? So this is, pretty cool that it's come back again. It's a sign, obviously, the first season went really well.
After we got the show finished,
This is Company of Giants. In the nicest possible way. do you hope that it will have potentially another season after this? Is it one that...
Probably not.
No,
okay. I think after the season
this will be
this will be the last one.
Right.
I probably should speak to that as NYT because it was never going to have a second season.
Yeah.
And then it was something that Georgia and I were talking about going Fringe is coming up and it would be nice to do something for NYT as part of Fringe.
Yeah.
And then Hayley Clark, the manager at NYT, said she was just like, well, why don't we? As a learning opportunity and just a cool opportunity for our cast to do it as a profit share. It's so that I guess our young people get an experience of what it's like to produce the show as well and maybe earn some money from doing something that they enjoy doing and that there is a potential in the future to go into the performing arts as a career.
Oh, that's really cool. So how have you guys found that process, taking on more of that kind of production work?
I think we're really lucky that we get to do it. I think NYT definitely makes it easy, very fun, relaxed and easy, which is good.
We have a space, we don't have to, organise all of that, props, costumes.
Yeah.
And are any of you thinking about, okay, I'm on the pathway now, I want to keep going with this, I'll kind of toy for Cardies in the future, or...
Yeah, I would like to, but I'm also going to be too young once I leave school, so I have to take a gap year and do something in between, but
There are people who've gone straight from school, though, right? I mean, Summer Millett it's tough, isn't it?
I'll be 17, and they don't like people who are 17.
But it's definitely, you guys feel like you're on the pathway?
I think so.
I think that's amazing, and for you guys as kind of the NYT managers to be able to provide that experience, because it's hard, all that stuff, promo and trying to dredge up ticket sales and how we're going to pay for things.
Yeah.
And interesting you say profit share, because I've never heard of profit happening with a theatre before.
Well, profit share may be $40
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so just repeating that again. So from next Wednesday, 12th of October, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. shows, both at the Octagon, and then obviously Thursday, the next day, 13th of October, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., both at the Octagon. Tickets are $15 and $10 concession. It's a 45-minute or 40-minute piece. and totally kid friendly, obviously.
Yeah.
My 3 year old seen it and gave it a very good review. So we'll be there again. I think actually I'm reviewing it too for Theatre Review. So don't worry, it's in the bag. Great. Okay. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming in, you guys, and please do get out and support local theatre, especially by our rangatahi. So we want to get really good, strong audiences. You can go onto the Fringe website, whangarei-fringe.co.nz, look up The Happy Prince, go to Event Finder, get yourselves a ticket, and school holidays, so there are no excuses. Okay, guys, thank you very much. Thank you, Hayley, my little friend. We'll be back shortly.
Yonder stands a man in this lonely crowd. Man who says he's not to blame. All day long I hear him hollering so loud, just crying out that he's not to blame. Songbirds are singing when the twilight is gone. You come into my heart, and here in my heart you will stay while I pray. My prayer is to linger with you at the end of the day, in a dream that's divine. In blue, with the world far away, and your lips close to mine.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Beagle. I'm joined in the studio now by Meg O'Halloran, who is the... What do you describe your role with Imaginarium? Are you the creative?
Yeah, I guess I birthed the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where did that... Was, let's first of all, we'll take a step back. The Imaginarium, I'm going to read the blurb for this. Beagle Radio presents the Imaginarium, an installation that touches on the voyeuristic society we live in today. Put my glasses on. One where we're able to peek inside others' worlds, sometimes invited and sometimes not. And there's a quote here from Cesar A. Cruz. Art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted. That's cool.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of Caesar before.
Have you heard that quote before?
No, I haven't.
That's quite a good one.
It's instinctively, it's very true.
Yes.
So tell me about the imaginary, where the idea come from.
We were all at Shipwrecked, the festival,
a
couple of years back, and sitting around chatting, and I was telling the Beagle crew who I was there with about, you know, how I'd love to do this one day. And it all started as probably about a 13-year-old when I remember hearing my mother, who's a very creative woman, talking about how terrible it is that how many empty shops we have in Whangarei.
Yeah.
Well, if I was 13, and you know, I'm 52 now, that's a long time ago to be still having empty shop windows, right?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, why don't they fill the empty windows with something? Mm. Because it gives a really bad message to us, the citizens of Whangarei, walking past empty windows. What message is that conveying, and where in our subconscious does that sit? You know, are we a boring town? Mm. Are we a empty town? Or what are we if we can't even fill, and we've just got empty spaces around us that are really boring and getting dirty, and people are filling them with signs that then become redundant and old, and you know, it's just not a nice thing to see. And I remember thinking then, why don't they just at least put some art in there, or a flower arrangement, or
anything.
Yeah. And then I thought, I imagine if someone was living in the shop window and and it's just a guy walking around in his undies, scratching his bum, not doing much at all, not, you know, watching TV, and the TV's just white, what's it
white
called?
Noise.
White noise. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah.
And people walk past and they're so used to seeing nothing that they sort of just sort of rubberneck and double take and go, what? What's, hang on a minute, what is that? And as the blurb of the Imaginarium says, it's... we've become such a voyeuristic society now. We're constantly watching each other.
Yeah.
And we're being watched.
Yep.
Who knows, at any given time, are we being videoed or filmed?
Mm.
And we've become so obsessed with our screens and watching other people and being watched. And there's a certain amount of narcissism involved in that, where people want to be watched even at their worst.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... we were chatting all about all of this at Shipwrecked, and they were all like, oh my God, yeah, and the idea just absolutely grew and took off between us, and we couldn't stop talking about it. Every now and then we'd all just sort of crack back into the conversation, and it grew and grew and grew. And then we were saying, well, who is the guy in the shop window? Does he have an identity, and is he a she, or is he or she gender fluid, and who are they?
Yeah.
Who is this person? So there's a certain amount of the Imaginarium that we want to keep under wraps until the end, because we've got a link to the Beagle Radio website where the audience, who are also part of the whole project, the audience is part of the installation.
Yeah. Do they know they are?
Well, yes, they are being filmed. We're doing that both for security reasons, but also because we want to observe the observers.
Yep.
This is the whole crazy kind of...
the circle.
...paradox, the dichotomy, the polar opposites, who's watching who.
Yeah.
I went off on a tangent. I forgot where I was going now. God, what I was going to say.
Talk to me about, so we were talking before about the idea that there's, who is this
person? Oh, that's right. Yes, sorry. That's where I was going.
So did it start, was there some sort of provocation from you to say, this is what I think is going to be happening?
Yeah, yeah. So we want to keep that under wraps until the end. So we've got a link on the Beagle Radio page for the audience to go on and tell us what they think is happening.
Okay.
Who do they think is this underlying character?
Right.
Because I'll give you a few hints. It's hard to talk about without giving it away.
Yeah.
This person is not actually a person, but they could be.
Okay.
And they are multi-faceted.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, everybody who's involved in the Imaginarium who is role-playing have this information about who they're playing, but it keeps evolving and going from good to bad, dark to light, evil to purity, you can't stay fixed in this one character. It just keeps merging and evolving.
Yeah.
And every now and then you slip into mental health, yeah. A sort of a state of poor mental health. Mm-hmm. And, for example, Mike and I are doing a show tonight, and it's basically about abuse and...
domestic abuse?
Domestic abuse, yeah. And power differentiation,
yeah.
Mental health, yeah, abuse of power, and yeah. How the person who is being abused just loses all sense of self and control.
Just depends about survival.
They become very small, mm. and the less you're able to use your voice, the less you're heard, and the less your voice actually works, you know, so... It's really been so fascinating how once we started the idea of what the theme of our show would be, how it just snowballed and suddenly you found yourself in quite deep.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking that's quite confronting.
Confronting, contentious, and as the saying there says, it is. It's supposed to disturb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to. So we want people to walk past and think, what the hell is that? What are they doing? And we want to know, we want to know what you think we're doing.
it's amazing. I mean, it is total performance art as well, isn't it? But it's it's there on the street in a context that you're going to get a lot of people just walking by who have got no idea that the Imaginarium's in. So we should say, too, that it's... In Megan Dickinson Gallery beside De Luca, beside the railway bridge on Rust Ave.
Mm.
And it runs every day from 3:30 until, says till late.
Yes, well, we actually chose 3:33 p.m.
That's right, 3:33, yeah.
Because we thought, oh, let's get all the school kids as they're coming out, because that's hundreds and hundreds of highly reactive individuals.
Unfortunately, the school holidays are on.
And it's a school holiday, so we didn't counter that in. Bugger. But even so, when we first had our first performance yesterday, there were people just wandering around through work or, you know. And it was a good crowd. But, yeah, we're really disappointed we didn't counter in this the school holidays. Because we really wanted to spook some.
Yeah,
there's a spooky nature to this, and we really wanted to spook a few.
And I think, you talk about kids too, and, you know, we've got kids and we know how much time they spend on their phones. And, and I was talking to my 22-year-old daughter last night, we're having this conversation about privacy and about, for them, so much of their life is online.
Mm.
She's at the age now where they're all applying for jobs. Mm-hmm. And there are people looking at their social media history to see and try and, you know, decide whether this person is a good fit to work in their company.
Mm.
And it's almost like you can't tell those guys the effect, potential effect, when they're 14, 15, 16, starting to curate their social media history, what that might look like in 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And so does it almost go the full cycle and say, you just put everything out there, so privacy becomes almost irrelevant?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
And it horrifies me because I kind of feel like I'm an introvert, and the last thing, I'm barely on social media because I hate the idea that people would kind of get some sort of insight.
Uninvited.
Look at my personal life. But for these guys, it's not a thing. So, I mean, I know when I go and see this, I'm going to be very confronted by the idea that I'm standing outside looking in and, if I go tonight, I'm seeing scenes of domestic abuse. I mean, I'm going to be sitting there twitching, which is the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
And
likewise, you know, our kids' employers will be looking at their social media, but... our kids will be looking at their employer's social media too.
Yeah.
There's
plenty of badly behaved
adults.
And also decide. And this is another, that came up in the conversation. Like, their decisions are utterly values-based now. It's not about the money or it's not about the career pathway. It's about, is this business or this job one that aligns with my values?
That's right.
Which is extraordinary.
Yeah, that's
really
pretty
positive
sophisticated.
Thing. It is. So is every performance different? Is there like a theme for every...
Yeah, once we got a group together, we put it out to sort of the Beagle whānau, the Beagle DJs, and then other people who we knew were sort of into performance and art and acting. So we got a small group of people together, and we really gave them free creative license to do however, gave them the overall idea, and then we said, you're free to do whatever you want to do. So there has been a Māori, a very ancient old Māori story, which I'd never heard before, performed yesterday with Olivia Carrington Hall and Megan Dickinson. Performed yesterday. And that was all about abusive power and someone being exploited, someone's youth and vulnerability being exploited. But actually ending on a nice note, ending on a happy note. Another performer who was in the window yesterday, he was going to his... your partner, Laurel, came and gave us a few tips, and she got him into the workshop before we actually went live. And he was going to sort of be sort of a conduit between him and a higher sort of God, and make contact with people in the audience and try to send really good vibes and let them know telepathically that everything's going to be okay. And after Laurel had finished with him...
He was so changed.
He lost his mind. He was an insane man who had just, gone crazy inside a shop window.
Wow.
Which was far more fascinating
than
his original idea. And also Laurel taught us about, we always feel like we have to perform. You know, we've got 45 minutes inside this shop window. And we've got to be doing something all the time. But actually, no, the whole point was that the person inside the window might be very bored or might be mentally unwell and depressed and not doing anything at all, might be just scrolling through their phone endlessly, which we all do.
Yeah.
If anyone were to peep through my home window, I mean, I'm just often just lying there staring out the window, you know, worrying or scrolling or... so tired, you know, napping.
Yeah.
It's not often you're really doing anything that interesting. So Laurel sort of emphasised that and about choosing, taking stances and being very, very still. And interestingly, those are the more interesting things to watch.
Well, and I think, you know, you can... you lay then your own interpretation of that, you know, as an observer, what that means and how that, you know, how that perhaps aligns or you know, doesn't align with you. And that becomes so much more interesting because you're then part of the process. You know, it's not laid out, not signposted. It's for you to interpret.
Yes, yes.
So what were the responses like yesterday?
Really positive. Yeah. Someone thought the guy I was talking about, Brian, who... ended up being the insane guy trapped inside the window. Someone thought he might have been in jail.
Right.
It's doing what we were hoping it would do. People are just, when you see someone taking a photo of the Imaginarium inside the shop window, you can see the reflections of the audience in the on the window. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're just deep in thought. You can see there was one guy in particular, his very furrowed brow, you know, hand on chin, finger on the chin, just
what am I seeing?
Trying to work out what the hell is going on here. What am I looking at?
Which is exactly what you
want. Which is exactly what we wanted,
And so you talked about your filming it, and partly that's for safety, obviously, because I guess potentially, you know, you're going to get some reactions from people that...
So the weekend hasn't arrived yet, and I'll be back in on, I can't remember if it's Friday or Saturday night. I think it's Saturday night. It's very provocative.
Yeah.
And if someone's had a few drinks and they're going from bar to bar, what are they going to do? So, I am prepared that there could be safety issues.
Yeah.
Someone might not like what they're seeing.
Yeah. So you're filming it, I guess, for security, but also you're filming it to... I guess, further understand it, to get...
Yeah, Yeah, we want to record it, obviously, yeah, because I think it's a first.
Yeah, I've
heard of it happening in, my brother said he saw something similar in Melbourne,
right,
where it was a closed in, it was inside an art museum, and it was closed in, and you could open, say there was a fridge door, and you open the fridge door and you looked in through the fridge didn't have a back on it, right, so you looked in through the back of the fridge. Or there was a painting on the wall and the eye had a hole in it, so you looked through the eye of the painting and there was a peephole and there was a person inside this room. So it's definitely been done. Apparently there was something similar in Berlin that one of our crew had seen as well.
Quite a different context in a museum though, eh? I mean, you really...
Yeah.
As opposed to walking along the street and... kind of doing a double take. And
I think Olivia was saying that when they were in Australia, you know, no lights, no lycra. Yeah. Well, they kind of did that in a shop window one night. Okay. So it's obviously been done in different forms, but definitely a first for Whangarei, I think.
Yeah. And as performers, do you feel safe? Do you feel...
You feel very vulnerable. Yeah. And you want to laugh because you feel so ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're not actors.
Yeah.
We're just some wacky people with a crazy idea that we really wanted to bring to fruition. But so we're not professional actors by any stretch. So wanting to laugh or thinking, oh God, what am I doing, is very strong.
Yeah.
You've got to work against that.
Yeah.
Again, Laurel said she worked with a director who would throw things at them if they broke into laughing. So if you're going to laugh, laugh. Laugh out loud, heartily, with like a madman. Hard.
Yeah. Dive into it.
And if you're going to pretend to have a cup of coffee or pretend to eat something, don't pretend. Go and get a cup of coffee. Yeah. Drink the cup of coffee. Eat the cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be real. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, I think you're incredibly brave. And it is the perfect fringe activity.
It's a good fringe one, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it is so... And that's what fringe does and what it should do, eh? It kind of gives people a framework to try things that are really brave and really out there. I really hope that that Whangarei is going to respond in a way that gives you guys back too.
So far, it's still early days, but we're really pleased with the response. And it's very interactive. We've got a QR code on the Megan Dickinson Gallery where it's being held on the window there. So you can scan that and it will take you to the Beagle radio page where you can log in and give us your feedback, what you think. And it's a competition. We haven't worked out what you're going to win. Might be a set of steak knives, I don't know. But there will be a prize for whoever gets the closest to what our initial fundamental idea, where all of this stems from.
So do you need to see more than one to get that?
Yeah, I think so. Cool. I think so.
And as we said before, everyone's different. So if you go tonight, you're going to see something different than you see tomorrow night.
They're very, very different, I mean, I'm going to go in on Saturday morning and I'm just going to be folding a bunch. I've got a pile of washing that needs folding and ironing. I'm going to bring it in and get straight out of bed, not brush my teeth or hair or put my dressing gown on and fold some washing for 2 hours.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a Imaginarium playlist that we've switched out with Beagle Radio.
Yep.
So that's also on the QR code that you can scan and listen to the playlist while you're watching.
Cool.
But the other thing is Mike, one of our Imaginarium crew, he has got an old, is it a wireless? It's a record player, old.
Yeah.
With like a wheel and it's just a beautiful piece of machinery. I don't even know if you can call it machinery. It's just gorgeous. So we're playing old vinyl as well, and you can hear it through the shop window, and it just sounds so creepy. It's the kind of music you'd hear, you know, a clown kind of dancing kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Yeah, or you're in the haunted house and the twins start riding their bike down the hallway.
So really that's all contributing to that discomfort that you want people to
experience. And so what is that about, the discomfort? Hey, why do we Why are we wanting people to feel uncomfortable? Is it?
Well, I think that's where, and you know, I was talking first up to guy Matt DeBoer, who's doing something called Climate Imaginaries next week at WAM, and it's a response to the impending climate crisis.
Mm.
And they're using sound and visuals to try and, you know, nudge people into thinking in a different way about the climate. And it, you know, it sounds like this is the same kind of principle. You know, you're trying to put people in a different context to get them to think a different way.
Mm.
And so it makes perfect sense.
Mm.
And we don't seek confrontation. I mean, it seems to me, and I kind of feel like this, the older I get, being comfortable is safer.
Absolutely, yeah.
But then we also instinctively know that, well, I think we're at our best when we're learning new things and having different experiences in our response to them. That's how we grow.
Yeah.
So.
And we were just talking before we came on air about how stupid busy we've become.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
COVID slowed us all down, which was the silver lining.
I know.
And we all took a breath and thought, oh, this feels right. Yeah. You know, damn COVID, but gosh, look how far off track we went.
Yeah.
And COVID seemed to have brought us back to a little bit of normality where we could breathe and think and stop and take a rest.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Then spend time with our whānau.
Yeah. Or ourselves.
Yeah, and ourselves, yeah.
And cook.
Yeah, exactly.
And rest and sleep and catch up.
Yeah.
And then we got back to normal with COVID and it's just taken off again.
Yeah.
And we're just rushing and racing and busy. How are you? I'm busy. It's such a wanky thing to say.
I know.
I'm busy. Yeah, I hate saying it.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that everybody else feels the same.
Yeah.
So how do we stop again? And I think maybe when you're walking along the street, rushing from A to B, and you see this crazy thing happening in the shop window and you stop.
You're forced to stop. And
you're forced to feel uncomfortable. And as you said, we do grow when we're feeling, you know, why is this making me feel uncomfortable?
Yeah.
What does that mean for me? We do stop and we start to think and we just step outside of that whole matrix where we're just rushing from one thing to the next.
Yeah.
Maybe it slows us down a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's it's an extraordinarily generous thing to do too. And you talk about the vulnerability and, you know, to put yourself out there for other people. and I know it's you guys are going to be getting something out of it too. And I'm sure you're all growing in different ways. You always do when you put yourself out there. But it is incredibly brave. So, look. Well done.
Thank you.
So every night until, or every afternoon from 3:33. You said Saturday morning, though?
That's the only day that we'll do something in the morning, just because it's a really busy time in Whangarei.
Yeah.
So that'll only be from about 9 to 11.
Okay.
And then from 3:33 onwards. So.
And it goes till late. So
it does. It just depends. We thought that we could go in and just keep going, you know, if we're having a good time, just keep going. But Laurel said, give yourselves 45-minute lengths of time and then have a breather, have a break and then reset and come back in if you want to keep going. But they are about 45 minutes long, on average. And just before I go, I just want to thank Megan Dickinson very much for being so brave and jumping on board and totally getting the concept because without her we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And also Dave and Ursula Fleeg and Mike Lyons, who have been hugely influential and practical in actually helping build the whole thing, putting it all together. So, there's a much larger group as well behind it, but they definitely made this happen. So, thanks to them.
Nice one. Well, thanks for coming in, Meg. So, Megan Dickinson Gallery on Rust Ave, beside DeLuca, opposite McCoy and Thomas, under the old railway bridge. Get down and support what is quite an extraordinary piece of art. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
some chickens in my sack. I got the bloodhounds on my back. Keep my skeleton and greasy all the time, time, time. Keep my skeleton and greasy all the time. If they beat me to the door, then I sick 'em on the floor. Keep my skeleton and greasy all the time, time, time. Keep my skeleton and greasy all the time. Honey, you say so, I'll never work no more. I'll lay around your shanty all the time, time, time.
Darkness at the break of noon, shadows even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon, to understand you know too soon, there's no sense in trying. Pointed threats, they bluff with scorn. Suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Temptation's page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar. You feel the moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound to your ear. It's all right, Ma, I'm only sighing. As some worn victory, some downfall, private reasons, great or small, can be seen in the eyes of those that call to make all that should be killed to crawl, while others say don't hate nothing at all except hatred. Disillusion words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark. Make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christs that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred. Our preachers preach of evil fates. Teachers teach that knowledge waits, can lead to $100 plates. Goodness hides behind its gates, but even the president of the United States sometimes must have to stand naked. And though the rules of the road have been lodged It's only people's games that you got to dodge. And it's alright, Ma, I can make it. Advertising signs that con you into thinking you're the one that can do what's never been done, that can win what's never been won. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. You lose yourself, you reappear. You suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand with nobody near. When a trembling distant voice unclear startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy, ensure you not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. But though the masters make the rules for the wise men and the fools, I got nothing, Ma, to live up to. For them that must obey authority that they do not respect in any degree, who despise their jobs, their destiny, speak jealously of them that are free, do what they do just to be nothing more than something they invest in. While some on principles baptize to strict party platform ties, social clubs in drag disguise, outsiders they can freely criticize, tell nothing except you to idolize and say God bless him. While one who sings with his tongue on fire gargles in the rat race choir, bent out of shape from society's pliers, cares not to come up any higher, but rather get you down in the hole that he's in. But I mean no harm, nor put fault on anyone that lives in a vault. But it's all right, Ma, if I can't please him. Old lady judges watch people in pairs, limited in sex they dare, to push fake morals, insult and stare. While money doesn't talk, it swears. Obscenity, who really cares? Propaganda, all is phony. While them that defend what they cannot see with a killer's pride, security, it blows their minds most bitterly. For them that think death's honesty won't fall upon them naturally, life sometimes must get lonely. My eyes collide head on with stuffed graveyards, false goals. I scuff at pettiness which plays so rough. Walk upside down inside handcuffs, kick my legs to crash it off. Say, okay, I've had enough. What else can you show me? And if my thought dreams could be seen, they'd probably put my head in a guillotine. But it's all right, Ma, it's life and life only.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio on Beagle. You're with Matt, Bob Dylan there. It's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding. We've got another interview coming up shortly, a phone interview with Joel Roos from Hooyah Express. They are appearing this Saturday at 116, or Joel is appearing this Saturday, 116 from 5:30 p.m. Once again, tickets, $15, $10 concession, ridiculously cheap. So Joel will be performing an intimate acoustic set sampled from his band, The Huia Express. We'll try and play a track from them after the interview. Ranging from laid-back jams to brooding confessional ballads, these songs span the scope of Joel's professional life as a musician. So Joel is, I think, born and bred Whangarei. He may have escaped for a while. I'm sure he'll end up back here. So we will listen to a quick track from a New Zealand artist, Aldous Harding. This one's Party, and then hopefully when we return, we'll be talking with Joel.
such a liar at supper time when I pulled into New Orleans. I got dropped off beside the Rampart Street. I was hungry for a plate of greens. I made my way down the banquet where I could see an open door. An overhead a sign made of painted pine read the Dixie Drugstore.
Welcome back to Beagle Radio. This is Fringe Radio, and I am just about to start having a chat with Joel Rise, who is the leader of Joel Rise and the Hooyah Express. Joel's going to be at 116 this Saturday from 5:30, playing an acoustic set. Welcome, Joel. Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks for having me.
Oh, look, it's so cool to talk to you. I haven't seen you for... geez, I was trying to think. The last time I think I would have seen you, you would have been on stage as the Moon in Al and the Pussycat, Company of Giants.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
That is going back a while. So you've got your own band now, Joel Rise and the Hooyah Express. Tell us a bit about where you are with the band at the moment.
Because I'm from Whangarei originally, but I moved to Wellington, and I was playing in a different band, and then that split up as these things go, and then this one just started as an amalgamation of people who were just in the loop, who were in a similar position, and it kind of kicked off that way, and it's been a vehicle for me to do my thing, which is songwriting.
Nice. So you are based in Wellington at the moment?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, cool. So you are making quite a trip to come back to Whangarei to perform on Saturday.
Yeah, that's right.
We better get a good crowd for you.
Yeah, so you all better come if you're listening.
Or I'm not coming home again.
Yeah.
So you're a full-time muso, would you describe yourself?
Yep, I'm working on this project pretty consistently. The other thing I'm doing is I'm making an animated music video, so I'm working on that pretty much every day as well.
Nice. So it's a busy life.
Yeah, I keep it busy.
And how are you finding Wellington in terms of being a musician? I mean, it's a pretty supportive place to be a creative. Is it feeding you?
I've certainly met a lot of people who are talented and kind and happy to participate. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. There's my phone doing a ridiculous thing. You mentioned you're born and bred in Whangarei, so Whangarei is still home. So obviously you've got whānau here. They'll be coming along on Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. And I think Whangarei is underrated. I mean, I'm probably biased because I'm from there, but whenever I'm back, I think people should be proud of it because it's a nice place to be.
Oh, man, that's such a cool thing to hear because we do get a bit of a kicking, you know. There's this perception, I think, of Whangarei, which is kind of negative, and it gets fed by the media. But look, I totally agree with you, and we're having a moment. Lately there's been some positive press about us, which is nice. But I think it's a really, I hope it's a really nurturing place particularly for creatives. You know, there's space here to try things, and you can be a bit brave, and it's a little bit lower risk. You know, you can learn your craft, and then take it away with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, plus because I went to Carmo High School, and that was a really encouraging place when I was there as far as becoming a musician.
Nice. And have you always been kind of naturally musically gifted?
Yeah, I would probably say so, yeah. Because I think my dad's told me he used to watch me tapping my fingers on the desk, you know, when I was a kid, and he was just...
You had rhythm.
...waiting for me to ask him for an instrument, you know.
Right. And what was your first instrument?
I kind of mucked around on his drum kit when I was younger, but I would say my first first instrument was a guitar, and I got that when I was 13, and so I've been playing for a long time now.
Yeah, and writing your own songs for equally as long?
Yeah, well, I think I was too lazy to try and covers thoroughly.
So it was easier to write your own stuff.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
excuse me. We're gonna take a track from Joel Rice and the Huia Express. This one's called Zay Mission Commence. So, was this your first kind of official single?
Yeah. The song is just called Zay Mission Commence. Is sort of the title we had for this spaceship adventure music video that we made for it.
Righto, cool. So Zay, yeah. What is Zay? What does that mean?
Zay is a Zay's a real estate agent in New Plymouth, and she has a convertible with her name as the number plate, and she has a massive billboard in the middle of town with her long legs just adorning the street, and I kind of wrote it as a joke, and it ended up being a banger, so...
And you were telling me before we came on air that you you played every instrument in this song.
In the one that just played before, yeah.
Okay. But, well, that's...
Yeah, Zay was done with the previous band lineup.
Okay.
And they all did a good job.
Nice. And performing solo, that's, you don't miss the band? You're really comfortable doing that?
Well, I mean, I love playing with people, and I really like bands, you know. I really like that ability for people to be friends and be somewhat intimate with each other and exchange that energetic thing, that frequency that happens when you play music together.
Yeah, nice.
But it is just the situation. I mean, bands are really hard to keep together.
yeah, I imagine. And, you know, it's a busy scene in Wellington. I imagine Good Musos are in more than just one band. They're collaborating with a bunch of people.
Yeah, that is the case, yeah.
Are you doing any of that yourself? Are you with anybody else? Or you at the moment, you're just working on your own until you get the band, the new version of the band, up and running?
Yeah, I'm quite stubborn. I think it's just me at the moment. But I would like to get more people to jump aboard the Huia Express, so to speak.
Cool. Okay, so how long are you going to be up for when you come home? Are you just an in-and-out visitor, or are you staying a while to catch up with peeps?
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably be up there for a week or so.
Cool. Okay, nice one. All right, so, look, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. Once again, Joel is at 116 this coming Saturday from 5:30 p.m. Tickets, $15, $10 concession. You'll be on for, how long's your set? I guess an hour or so, is it?
Yeah, it's an hour, yeah.
Nice one, okay. So get out and support, look, first of all, supporting musicians, but one of our hometown musos, and really look forward to seeing you. Thank you again, and we'll take a track now, which is called Zay. Take care,
cool,
man.
Thanks so much for having me.
See you soon.
See ya.
Bye. Destroyed, boxed by design.
Bye.
guys in the Hoorie Express. That was Zay. So that's a fantastic track. So Joel will be here at 116, 5:30 this Saturday. Do come along and support. If you get a chance, go online and Google or the Hoorie Express and Zay and look at videos. And that is an outstanding locally made video. You've got to see it to believe it. Okay, we'll be having another interview shortly with Hamish Anan, and then I think we have one other after that. Jeez, I wish I had a producer. It's full on in here. And then after that, Sam and Karina DeVetta, who are the Blue Valley. So Hamish will be in about 11:30 talking about his piece, Access. And then that'll be swiftly followed by Sam and Karina. Access is on here today at 3 p.m. and then tomorrow at 8:30 p.m. at 116. It's another free performance, so no excuses, peeps. And it is described as a piece exploring human connection and emotional vulnerability. Access brings a subversive lens to the performance of masculinity. And I know that Stuart Devinney is reviewing that for Theatre Review. And then the Blue Valley, who I'll be talking to Sam and Karina from, is my marvellous book, on at the Octagon tomorrow, 6:30 p.m, and then on Friday at 7 p.m, also at the Octagon, another Koha show. Karina and Sam, a singer-songwriter duo, inviting you to listen to their original songs. The Blue Valley is their latest work, where melancholy and hope meet through ethereal, rhythmic guitar sounds and authentic, honest, warm vocals. So, yeah, look forward to talking to both those guys. In the meantime, you are on Fringe Radio on Beagle FM in Whangarei. If you are driving around town, you feel like popping in for a chat, maybe give us a review, then feel free to come and knock on the studio door. In the meantime, I will return you to a track. We were listening to the Sex Pistols under there. I'm sure that's not very Imaginarium playlist. Anyhow, this is a track from the Beths, another New Zealand band. This is a reasonably new one of theirs called Knee Deep.
late for a meal, then went up to bed. Lay there wondering what's happening in her head. I put it all down to the heat and wine. We don't have to agree all of the time. Remember she wants to be by your side. Be by your side. She couldn't stand it, that she couldn't stay out here on the road. It didn't feel right. She listed the things about me she didn't like. I sat there in silence, accepted our fate. We always found it hard to relate to what we both want and what we both need and who we both want to be.
Thank you.
Julia Jacklin and a cover of The Strokes, Someday, and I think there were a couple of other Julia Jacklin tracks before that too. You are on Fringe Radio on Beagle FM in Whangarei. We are at 116 and we are on day 5 of the Whangarei Fringe Festival. Excuse me. You can come down, there's plenty around, and it will give you an amazing insight into what's going on in town over the 17 days of Fringe, Whangarei Fringe 2022. You can also go online to whangareifringe.co.nz, go to the What's On page, and every event is listed there. You can search by genre, by event name, or by day, and that will give you a link through to Event Finder for ticketed events. There's also so many free or koha events, including another couple of performances here today, which are free entry, and they are by Auckland performer or performance artist Hamish Anand. Hamish will be in here at 11:30 for a quick chat. If you've got today's Advocate or you're online, you can go to the Northern Advocate website, northernadvocate.co.nz, and the title is Two Unsettling Whangarei Fringe Festival Shows Set to Challenge Northern Audiences. So Hamish's piece essentially is another performance art piece. He will sit or invite an audience member to sit down opposite him and give him an emotion, and then he will respond to that emotion. So I'm really keen to find out more about that, whether it's purely just movement or whether he's responding to that verbally. And that will run for an hour. Hamish describes it as speaking to the human condition. The interaction ripples around the room and becomes an interesting experience of multiple people being moved in different ways and feeling different things. The piece has done really well. It won the Fringe Touring Award at the last Auckland Fringe Festival, I think, or New Zealand Fringe Touring Award. Hamish is also a really well-established artist. So if you are in town today, please do come down to 116. Hamish is performing at 3 p.m. and then again at 8:30 p.m. It's free, but booking is recommended because it's you know, we're a limited space. We can only have just over 100 people in here. Come down, and you don't have to participate if you want to. That's cool, but you are more than welcome to observe and to see how you respond to the interaction. Other events on today at 116, Pachakacha, which is the 20 by 20 format where people get up and talk to 20 slides, 20 seconds a slide each. Unfortunately, Pachakacha is sold out. So if you didn't get in, you could try a door sales ticket. There may be some people who don't show up. You might get lucky. Pachakacha is always amazing. You never know what you're going to get. And it is a group of local, interesting local people who've got good stories to tell, and also a spontaneous Pachakacha where we're going to get two people who've got no idea what the images they're about to see are going to be, and then they have to make up a story to go with it. And then currently on at 116, it is a hall full of very young people who are enjoying Nina Lane. It's absolutely chocker and about to go nuts when they come out. The Imaginarium on tonight, we talked to Meg, the creative inspiration behind the Imaginarium. That starts at 3:33 this afternoon outside Megan Dickinson Gallery. Another free event. You are encouraged to go down and just observe and see how you respond to what's happening inside the gallery. Big day tomorrow. Plant Lab is on in the Strand. That's an open day, so you're welcome as members of the public to go down and just go in and talk to the people who are running it. I was down there last week with my daughter. We were making music out of vegetables and fruit and plants. It's you've got to see it to believe it. It's amazing. She loved it. We were there for the best part of 45 minutes. Also on again, the Imaginarium, Chopin's last tour from 6:30, and then local comedian Kipling Davis Colley and his partner Kwame Hawani will be performing the Intense Tiger Fist comedy tour at Fringe After Dark. Snowcock is on. I think Damo talked about that yesterday. Morris Dancing Workshop, Whangarei's second best genderqueer folk artist, Cicada, will be here at 116 from 8 p.m. Like Sex, debuts. Its premiere at the Octagon at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. I'm going to that. That is directed by our very own Damien Pullen. And then the Fringe After Dark open mic night, which is just terrifying to watch. Local, very, very brave local people getting up and having a crack at stand-up. That's at Fringe After Dark from 8 p.m. This is all tomorrow. We will return very shortly, I hope, with Hamish and have a chat to him about his performances here today at 116.
Chosen ones and leave them out in their dreams.
back to Fringe Radio and Beagle. I am joined in the studio by Hamish Annan.
Hi, how are you? I'm welcome. Good. Welcome. Yeah. Thank so you for having
me. Hello, it's great you're here. I'm utterly intrigued by the conversation we're going to have and the piece that you're performing here today. Mm-hmm. Two performances at 116, both of them free. Can't get better than that. You just driven up from Auckland today? Or?
Just come up from Auckland,
and
yep.
Heading back tonight?
And heading back tonight, yeah. It'll be a midnight arrival, I imagine.
Great dedication. So, look, if you have hold of The Advocate today, physical or online, go and read it. There is a great piece in there about Hamish's work. I'm not going to give too much away because we're going to talk through it, but do go on and read it. So, tell me, your piece is called Access.
Access, yes.
And it's described as performance art.
Yeah, kind of lives in that weird territory between something you might see at like an art gallery
yep.
and maybe something you'd see at a theatre.
Yep.
It's sort of an in-between realm.
Yep. And so essentially, you're on a chair
mm-hmm.
and you invite someone from the audience to come up. And
yeah, that's right.
They give you one emotion, just one word?
One emotion. Yeah, from a list that we provide you with.
Okay, so semi-curated.
Six emotions to choose from.
Yep.
Aggression,
yep.
happiness,
yep.
grief, lust, fear, and disgust. So, okay. you know, all the easy ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, as an audience, people choose what emotional experience they want to have with me. So the audience selects themselves.
Yep.
So that's an interesting decision as everyone kind of goes, who's coming up next?
Yep.
What's going to happen? You know, based on what you've just seen,
yep.
people might want to choose the same one or a different one.
Oh, so you can do that. There's nothing to stop people.
No, okay. nothing to stop people. You can actually participate multiple times.
Okay.
We'll be performing for an hour. At the end of the hour, that'll be it.
Yep.
So you can kind of really make it what you want, I suppose,
okay.
as an audience.
And so your response to the emotion, is it purely physical? There's no verbal...
Yeah, pretty much
okay.
physical. There might sometimes a bit of vocalization with the extreme emotions
that
comes out of it, but very much just the physical connection with the other person
right.
in the space.
Right. And are you up out of your seat or you stay seated the whole
stay
time?
Stay seated the okay. whole time, yeah. So that kind of adds an interesting bit of a challenge for me as well because
yeah.
big emotions do want to move.
Yeah, move, exactly.
But I think for... audience safety and my own safety as well, I suppose, it
yeah.
kind of creates a nice little framework that we kind of sit and stay.
Right.
And that's the rules that we play within.
Okay. And so there must be a huge amount of you having to read the person who's opposite you because, you know, like you say, you could have six different people come up. They could all choose the same emotion.
Totally.
Every response will be different.
Every response will be different. And it really is about what they're feeding into the interaction as well. So
yeah.
if people go along with it or... put more energy into the performance, then I respond in kind, and that
right.
increases the strength
yep.
of each emotion.
Okay.
So sometimes it can be very subtle,
yep.
and sometimes it can be quite energetic and quite extreme.
Yeah, yeah. So you must have seen, I mean, I'm not sure how many times you've performed this, a lot?
A lot, yes.
Yeah. So you must have seen the whole kind of range of people's responses. Some, I imagine, just are quite static.
Yes,
and some
yes.
are responding to you and...
Yeah, certainly on our industry night, we had a lot of people who wanted to sit back and observe,
right.
you know,
yeah, yeah.
you know, people from,
learn something.
From the industry. but yeah, so a huge range of experiences from people and wide age ranges as well. Like
yeah.
we had a very playful youth audience one time, so a lot of teens came along and they were probably only sitting down for a minute or two and then swapping out with their friend
and
doing
all those
sorts of things. That's totally fine.
Okay.
Others may choose to sit for, you know, 5 minutes and
yep.
really just kind of soak in what
yep.
they're getting.
Yep.
But the audience stands fully around the performance, so you can actually move around and look
okay.
at it from any angle,
yep.
which is interesting as well because then you as an audience become an interesting focal point
yep.
in the performance.
Yep.
And you see not only the emotion between the people sitting, but also how that ripples
yeah.
through the audience.
Yeah.
And that's quite an interesting part of watching the performance.
And
as
are
well.
You aware of kind of what's going on, or are you just totally...
I'm very much focused on the person in
right.
the chair.
Yeah.
I can sense what's going on around me, but
yeah.
I actually surprised myself that one of our first performances, a friend of mine who I hadn't seen for years but was an old school friend from like high school came and sat down, and I saw them. They were actually just sitting like just behind the chair when they were in the audience. Didn't see them until the moment they sat down, so I am very much focused in on the person opposite me. But the energy in the room, you definitely feel that sort of collective emotion and empathy and
experience. And I imagine too, for some people it's very confronting.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I guess even just at the low levels of each emotion, that can be quite a lot for people, and they don't need it to go any more extreme than just gently sort of sitting there seething away this emotion. I think a lot of people have told us that they get they were more nervous and worried in the audience, but actually when they sit down they go, oh, this is
right,
this is okay, I can handle this. And
that, I mean, that's credit to you as a performer. I mean, that's you're trying to make these people feel safe so you can get the most out of them.
Totally. And it certainly pushes people, you know. It moves people a little bit outside of their comfort zones and what they may be expecting. But as I say, it's very much about what they're putting into it as well. So if they go with that, then we'll see how kind of playful and extreme and joyful, I suppose, it can get. But if you're only putting in a little bit and you're a little bit more reserved, then you get that level of experience. But that's just as exciting, I think, as any of the other ones.
And who do you find in terms of an audience demographic? Who are the ones who are kind of the most responsive or the most playful? Or
I think theatre people who go to theatre and kind of are in the arts, I think appreciate it. But also young people as well. Kids and teens really seem to respond to it. We're really kind of excited about it. I had one young woman sit down and she asked for aggression and she's like, I'm going to do it with him. Right. And we ended up sort of like barking at each other almost. It was a very kind of weird, playful sort of experience. So the full range really. And I think because you can experience it more than once, some people come back and they go, I know what I'm going to do this time.
Okay.
I'm going to play with something
and
else.
And that's fine. That's not,
totally
doesn't feel
fine.
Really
what is what you make it. And so every performance is completely different. Each one's kind of, it's fun for me as the performer to sort of sit in that and go, okay, what's going to happen next? I have to be quite open and vulnerable to that. But we've always had really lovely kind of audiences that sort of respect the space that's being created
and understand what the dynamic is.
And I think because, you know, some people have very kind of profound emotional experiences, they're really moved by the piece, that everyone sort of recognizes that and gives people the space to kind of feel and process what has kind of been triggered or arises in them.
Yeah, it's a real privilege actually, and you know, for someone to put themselves in such a vulnerable position in order for you to experience something, it's a privilege, I imagine, as that person to be able to access your emotion, but also, you know, with an audience, uncomfortable potentially, and I guess we talked about that being confronting, but. But, you know, we tend to be, and, you know, talking as a kind of a middle-aged Pākehā male, you know, don't show too much emotion.
Yeah, totally. And that was probably me growing up, I would say.
Right.
So it's very interesting that in my work I kind of reflected on this recently, that I've created something that is in stark contrast to my own emotional life growing up. It really is kind of pushing that boundary for me a little bit. And certainly that's what we see from our audiences as well, that people either went on two extremes, really, going, oh gosh, that I didn't feel anything.
Right.
That's concerning. I need to look a bit deeper inside myself, maybe. Or on the other hand, wow, I was feeling things that I didn't even kind of expect to sort of pop out.
Beautiful.
So it's quite surprising really sort of sincere responses seem to come out of it. Hopefully that doesn't scare people away, but also, you know, it's very fun and playful as well.
You know,
it's the full kind of gamut that it runs, really.
And talk to me a bit about the genesis of the piece. It sounded like it came out of COVID, like a lot of great work is at the moment.
We're
starting to see that, that kind of the genesis of that time.
Absolutely. And I think what we found is I was given an opportunity to just do a performance post a lockdown, and my friend Amber Liberté, who's a choreographer in Auckland, she sort of said, do what you like, really. Try something new. And it's an idea that had kind of been sitting in the back of my mind. And so I thought, well, because it's a distanced work, you're separated from the audience, that really works well under COVID protocols.
Yeah.
and really for an audience of people, it was at an outdoor venue, who had been quite separated from their community and stuck at home,
yeah,
and hidden behind masks.
Yep.
And it was really kind of, I thought, a way to sort of start to bring people together in a safe way.
Start the connections again. Yeah.
And I think we've retained some of those things like the distance between the performer and the audience, because it is safe. It creates a sort of a safe space,
a buffer,
to have that experience. But the connection with the other person is instant. And I think that's what keeps people coming back to the work, is that there's something kind of really human and really kind of it involves them in a way that maybe they haven't been involved in a theatre performance before. You're very much an active part of the work, whether you like it or not.
That makes perfect sense. And look, just before we wrap up, I'm just, afterwards there must be people who they've had a very intense experience.
Mm-hmm.
Do you kind of hang around and is there any sort of debriefing that if people want to have, they can have?
Or? Yeah, so we have a few channels. We try and make a written sort of form available that you can sort of
download
into.
Yeah.
But I would be available for a kōrero afterwards if anyone wants to discuss or nice. Kind of process everything. A lot of people, I think, need to just go outside and go,
have a breath.
Let's have a moment.
It must be exhausting for you too, though. I mean, it...
Very physically exhausting, The way I go about it is I don't actually access these emotions through memories.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is keeps it safe for me. So it's a very physical process for me. So yes, very tired afterwards. But actually, I find I've got a lot of energy afterwards as well, because there's so much energy zinging through the room that I can't help but kind of have a bit of pep in my step afterwards.
Well, that's how it should work. You know, you guys, you put it all out there. You've got to get it back.
Yes. Ironically, I'm the one that's not emotionally drained afterwards. Normally the audience.
No.
I feel quite calm.
Cool, that makes sense. Okay, so you are on today here at 116, two performances at 3 p.m.
Yep, 3 p.m. and then 8:30 p.m. I'm speaking at the Pitchakucha tonight.
Oh,
yay.
Oh, nice.
So I'm talking a little bit about how I actually do the emotional work in the show. So anyone that's coming to that is very welcome to stay.
Oh, I'm sure you'll be chocker tonight, because I know that's sold out.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, so look, make an effort to get down here at 3 o'clock today. It sounds like an extraordinary piece of work. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
No, thank you for having
me.
And
I hope it goes well.
Cheers.
And safe travels home.
Thank you.
right. Welcome back straight away to Fringe Radio on Beagle. I'm sitting here with Karina. Is that the right way to pronounce it? Karina and Sam DeVetta. They are appearing at the Octagon tomorrow night from 6:30. Excuse me.
Thursday night.
Sorry, oh, yeah, it's Tuesday, isn't it?
It's Tuesday.
I've lost today already. Yeah, yeah. Thursday, 6th of October, 6:30 p.m. at the Octagon, and then the following day, Friday, at 7 p.m. They are called Blue Valley, and the name of their piece is Where Hope and Melancholy Meet. It's a koha performance, first of all. Well done, you guys.
Thank you.
There's so many amazing performers and performances that are free or koha in this festival. It's brilliant. So, nice one. So tell me a bit about yourselves.
Well, we're married.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is mostly fun. Sometimes when you do music together, that can also cause some tension.
Yes.
Our first major fight was when we were writing our first major song.
That's true.
But you're still together, so obviously.
Yeah. It worked out so far. Fingers crossed. I'm German-Portuguese.
German-Portuguese.
Yes,
yeah.
I am.
Good
mix. I'm a Kiwi boy.
Yeah.
And we met in England. Nice. So that's where we spent. I spent 10 years there, 5 years.
Yeah, I was there for five years. Yeah.
Cool.
And then we lived overseas in Germany. And we have been here in Whangarei now for...
About a year and a half.
About a year and a half.
We made it back during the pandemic.
Yeah. Mm. You're not from Whangarei originally?
My family's from Whangarei. Okay. And I've spent a few times. Here's the third time living here now. So,
right. Yeah. Cool. And how's it going? How is Whangarei for you, Karina?
I love it. Love the beaches.
Nice.
Love the laid-backness.
Yeah.
Can you say that way? Yeah.
You can.
No, I do like it. People are very friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love it. Yeah. It's really good.
And you guys have been making music together for how many years?
We've been married 14.
So 15 years.
Yeah, so 15 years we've been making music together.
Yes. Yep.
And you said you met in London?
Yeah,
England?
In the UK. No, okay. We met in Kent, but okay. I lived in London at that time, yes.
And what, in and around the music scene?
So mostly Christian scene for a while. We're church people.
Yep.
And so we kind of were there for a while and did like small gigs here and there. And then Sam played in a few bands outside of church, but I mostly did that. And then this track is a little different for us. Kind of had a breakup with religion, I suppose.
Okay.
And so I think that will feature in the music in some ways too.
Mm. So it describes the journey of like what Karina said with the Blue Valley and melancholy of actually... Portuguese love melancholy.
Oh my gosh, so much.
The melancholy side is where they find themselves and where they
process.
Comfortably sit and process through things.
Yeah.
And the reason for this being where melancholy meets hope is staying in the melancholy until it's done.
Right.
Yeah.
And sitting there, and then afterwards the hope can be seen from a position of melancholy.
Right. Because that is, I was just talking to a guy before, Hamish, who's doing a piece called Access today, and his response to, basically, you give him an emotion and he responds to it. But he said a huge part of it is, particularly for kind of middle-aged Pākehā men, is that you suppress. You suppress pain, you suppress emotion, and you know, toughen up, deal with it.
Right.
And that, you know, you talk about sitting in the melancholy, and which can be painful.
Oh, so painful.
Yeah.
Oh,
can
it's been
be.
Such
yes.
a rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's been such a rough ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where those songs come from, really.
Yeah.
They're just one rough patch after the other we had for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Various things.
Wow.
And I think it takes some courage. But I think, again, you know, some of us lean a certain way. And I just couldn't suppress anymore. I think I was 15 and I was like, I can't do it. I need to feel.
Can't squash. Come out.
Exactly.
So how do you keep yourself safe through that process?
Mm.
Because, you know, there are some pathways through that process which are dangerous.
Yeah, that's true. So I think part for me was hiding away, because sometimes it wasn't even safe here in this relationship.
Yeah.
The other part is I sought some help. I sought some safe spaces. So I had one-on-one therapy at times. I also had really safe friends.
Right.
You know, you can count them on one hand, really safe
places.
But that's all you need. You need one, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, somebody who's willing to sit with you in the trenches.
Yep.
And so I had that, and that's how I kept safe.
Yep. And
music.
And I was going to say, that's
music.
My next question.
That's,
music.
I mean, my big space is to just sit there, and everybody's in bed, the lights go off, and I have a moment to go. And I think music has got such a... it's a medium to create space, and it created space for me. And some of those songs, really, I played a note, and then the words just rushed out of me. Right. They were written like that. Wow. It was amazing. Yep. Yeah.
And are there songs that, or songs that you've gone back to and they stand up for you? Oh, yeah. Or are they too personal to share? Or
No, I want to share them.
Right.
Because they have been such a soundtrack for me.
Yeah.
Ever since. And when I've played them, you know, to one or two, they've said, oh, that song has become such a soundtrack for my journey.
Okay.
So well, no, I'm quite willing.
That must be an amazing thing to hear.
It's amazing. Yeah. I love that. I think that propels me actually to now introduce it to Whangarei. Yes.
I mean, you've always lived with this philosophy of if it's helping you, there's bound to be at least one or two other people who need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that I've learned through the whole process as well, being a Kiwi bloke and always suppressing. So I went to music, but the instrumental side of it, where Karina went to the words as well as the music, and it's forced me to put language to what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
This whole process has forced me to be confronted with the fact that, hey, I'm suppressing things, and if I want to stay with this diamond, I've got to match it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
it's beautiful.
Yeah,
amazing. So you write songs too?
I've written a few, but this project is Karina's journey.
Okay.
So I've added guitaring to the point of she wrote most of the songs on piano, apart from one or two where I said, sing some lyrics to this, and the song was done in 15 minutes.
Mm.
The majority was written on piano, and so it was a journey for us to try and create something on electric guitar that matched the piano in a different way. So it's been a fun journey to collaborate on that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And have you found, and I hope this isn't too personal a question, but have you found that, you know, kind of, I guess, showing each other that much vulnerability, that it strengthened the relationship?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say so.
I think
we're together still because of that.
Because of
that.
Because
of
the work.
I think we wouldn't have made it without that. Yeah.
I mean, I spent probably a year or two listening to podcasts, reading books, writing out screeds and screeds of things on a notepad, just so that I could be at a point of matching in conversation and matching in the heart connection that Karina had brought right from the start.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. That's really amazing.
Yeah, it was touch and go for a minute.
Yeah.
It was touch and go.
Well, a long minute.
That's relationship. So, I mean, I think that is a really hopeful thing to be able to show people, that if you're prepared to dive in and go deep and come out the other side and trust each other, then
and it takes two. You know, if one party isn't willing, you know, then we would have parted ways. And I think that's the truth for many people as well.
Absolutely.
You know,
and many people do.
Yeah, and that's the right choice then, I think, as well.
Yeah.
But if you're both willing, as long as you're willing and you're doing the work, I think, and there is always hope. Yeah.
Ah, lovely. Mm. Well done. And so the future, what comes after this?
That's a good question. We debate about this. I mean, I would like to take the music maybe on the road a little bit.
Yeah.
We've got two kids, so I'm always thinking, okay, how are we going to do this?
How old are the kids?
Just turned 13 on
nine.
Friday, and 9.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
They're hanging around here somewhere.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I think that's it.
But also wanted to get some more online as well. And
I would definitely record
those
songs.
Share it that way a little bit more.
Oh, so none of them are recorded yet?
Three are recorded. Okay. You can listen to them on Spotify, on Karina and Sam DeVetta, or Music.
Yeah, I think just Karina and Sam DeVetta, and then Karina and Sam Music is the Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have recorded some
Instagram,
of them, but I would like to make an album. I would like to really package them up and maybe do a little booklet with it, say a few things. Yeah, it's an important journey. You know, the heart matters. Our hearts matter, and I think makes the world a better place if we're all walking around healthy. It's just a knock-on effect, isn't it?
Yeah. And an amazing thing, too, to model to your kids.
Like, yeah.
This is the way to live your life, and we're walking the talk. You know?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's the best way. I don't think I could do it another way.
No.
I'm a bit black and white that way.
is that a cultural thing, do you think? Or?
Yeah, probably, as my dad's very principled.
Right.
So I think it definitely has instilled that in me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my mum, I think she catches up all the time to my dad. So,
I mean, for me, 11 years in Germany, I again was confronted with the whole concept of just being, I wouldn't say blunt, but direct.
Yeah.
And being quite straightforward, where a lot of emotion was taken out of dealing with the deeper issues, where people would say, oh, I don't like that.
Right.
And learning to be comfortable with somebody saying, I don't like that. Yeah. Where in New Zealand, it's like,
maybe
we could think of another way that this would work.
Yeah. So I don't want to offend you.
Okay.
Yeah. And we skirt around it for days and days. And
exactly.
Then, yeah.
So it was that combination, I think, of the German and the Portuguese coming together,
yep.
where you had the emotional attachment
yep.
to this directness yep. and this very principled way of saying, this works, this doesn't.
Yep.
And
that's
being confident
amazing.
In who you are. So, yeah.
Amazing combination.
Yes.
What a journey.
What a journey, I'm telling
yeah.
you. I'm kind of glad it's in the past, but it still makes really nice music.
Right.
So I hope if people, you know, like pop music, but of independent music, alternative, I think that will be right at home.
Okay, cool. So that's the genre. It's kind
of... Yes,
yep.
it is. Yeah.
Yep. Sort
I
of
think
an ethereal...
It's really tricky.
Go, yeah.
We keep thinking about it, but
who needs labels?
Yeah, yeah. Who needs the labels?
Think a little London Grammar type guitaring
okay.
feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But alongside the indie pop.
Yeah. Bit of funk.
So
bit of R&B
and,
influences.
Yeah.
And so you play keyboards in the?
I do. No.
Okay.
I don't.
Just guitar.
I
and
just
you're just singing.
Play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just played home. I'm self-taught.
Okay.
He bought me a piano a couple of years ago. It was really cute, actually. Somebody said, oh, you should play piano. And I've always wanted to. And I taught myself as a kid a bit because my mum is an amazing pianist, but
yep.
she never sat down with me. And so he bought me one, and I got so mad. I'm like, why are you putting this pressure on me?
And
but,
it sat almost unplayed for about 2 years,
it
didn't
did.
It?
It did.
And then the songs came out of it.
Yeah, and I wrote all these songs.
Well done.
Mm. Yes, I'm very grateful. Well
yeah.
done.
Beautiful. Okay, so... you guys, once again, they are Thursday, 6th of October, 6:30 p.m. at the Octagon, and then Friday, 7 p.m., 7th of October,
also at the Octagon.
Koha to get in, says you guys are performing, it's about an hour and a quarter?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, well thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for opening up and being so honest.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh,
thank
it's
you.
A pleasure. Well done. Okay, this is Fringe Radio. That is Fringe Radio for... Tuesday, day 5 of Fringe. Get out and support. Remember to go online, whangadayfringe.co.nz, or pick up one of the amazing books from 116 or around town. And we'll see you at Fringe.
Oh, baby, I like it, bro. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah. Give me the mic so I can take it away. All for an absolute charge, bon voyage. Yeah, from the home of the Dodgers, Brooklyn squad. Wu-Tang killer, hubbies on the swamp. Rain on your college ass, just so dumb. But you didn't even touch my skill. You rather vote the one killer, be any hate of a kill now. Drop that down, pass it all around. Lyrics get hard, quick cement to the ground. But any MC in any 53 states, I get psycho killer, Norman Bass. My producer slam, though it's like, bam, jump on stage and then I dent down.
Time to get some pussy.